You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome to New Wisco Weekend. I'm Lisa Hale, your host. I hope you're enjoying your wonderful 4th of July holiday weekend. And with that in mind, our theme for this issue is the 4th of July and rock and roll. Because what's more American than rock and roll? It originated in the United States, emerging in the 1950s as a mix of styles, including rhythm and blues, country music, even gospel. And we'll dive into some fun Northeast Wisconsin rock and roll history in just a bit. Meanwhile, our cover story veers off topic a little bit, yet it's a focus on a very timely issue regarding the important work of Feeding America. How will all the federal funding cuts affect the group and ultimately those of you who are dealing with food insecurity in Wisconsin? Melissa Kay gets some answers coming up in about 20 minutes. We also have stories on fireworks safety, both ways to prevent injuries and structure fires, plus how fireworks can affect those who have PTSD. Amanda Nimmer has something to say, and you don't want to miss her rant about the loud parts of celebrating Independence Day. Pete Schwabe has his classic cinema pick of the week that features a look at one of the best rock and roll bands of all time, in my humble opinion. And speaking of Pete Schwabe, Pete also appears on our music segment later in the show. And this one kind of takes us full circle, from Wisconsin's more recent rock and roll history with a band like the Bodines to actual rock and roll history, thanks to a 1950s group from our state. Terry Barr spent some time digging into this, and just wait until you hear about the impact some Northeast Wisconsin musicians had during the early days of this genre.
You are listening to what's considered the very first rock and roll song recorded in Wisconsin. It's called Rock and Roll Saddles by a band known as the White Caps. Music archives show the five members of the White Caps were from Appleton, and a few were still in high school. The song, written by guitar player Ricky Lee Smolinski, is about girls dancing to the music wearing their saddle shoes. It all makes sense, doesn't it? The band recorded the song during a 1956 session at what was a new studio, the Northland Sound in downtown Wausau. The Whitecaps tracked two tunes for their band's 45 record. It was released in January of 1957, and though Rock and Roll Saddles gets quite a bit of airplay, it doesn't end up catching on nationally on the radio. But hey, this is fun. Rock and Roll Saddles makes it on TV. It was featured on the American Bandstand show during one of the famous song rating segments. It's unknown how many of the original 45s were printed, but according to an album sales website, depending on the condition, the Rock and Roll Saddles 45 can now bring more than $400 a piece for collectors. It's interesting to note this song also helped expand the White Cap shows beyond those small local clubs. Music archives show regular gigs began at the Riverside Ballroom on Main Street, which was the largest venue in the Green Bay area at the time and is still open today. The band also played regularly at the Cinderella Ballroom on South Oneida in Menasha. Sadly, that was demolished in the 1980s. But also the Eagles Club Ballroom on Washington Avenue in Oshkosh, which is now renovated and known as the Howard. The Whitecaps called it quits by 1959. Some of the musicians went on to have a little bit of success with other groups, but it's still this song that holds a note in Wisconsin music history.
Rock and roll. Happy Independence Day from New Wisco Weekend on 97.9 WGBW and 98.3 and 96.5 WISS.
If you're going to do backyard fireworks this 4th of July weekend, it's important to know that not everyone can handle the noise. Joanne Krulatz has that story.
Erin Collins is a victim advocate at Amplify Health System.
The most important thing to remember during this holiday season is that there are people out there that you may not know that hide out in their houses, that avoid the fireworks and the festivities, and it's not because they're less patriotic or less appreciative of the holidays. It's just that the loud cracks and booms associated with fireworks is very difficult for them to handle.
Those loud noises can be difficult for some individuals who have post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, which is a mental health disorder that can develop in some people after they witness a scary, dangerous, or even shocking event.
Post-traumatic stress disorder can affect a lot of people this time of year when it comes to fireworks being set off, that kind of noise that occurs afterwards. We often assume that people are okay. We just shoot fireworks whenever we feel like it. But there's a lot of people that are held up inside their homes that are bracing for the impact this time of year that may have gone through a traumatic experience that has led them to be afraid of loud cracks and booms.
Collins says there are things you can do to be mindful of others who may have difficulty in coping with the sudden sounds from 4th of July festivities.
Following local ordinances is important in shooting off proper fireworks that are not too loud or too flashy. Also containing it around the time of the 4th of July is better. It's a lot more surprising for people who have PTSD when they're firing them off at all hours of the day during the week. So they can brace for impact on the 4th of July, but if there's fireworks going off at all hours, then it's a lot more difficult for them to cope. Sometimes our veterans who have come back from foreign wars are impacted by those loud cracks and booms from fireworks. Some of them have trauma or PTSD, and it's important to remember them during this time of year, not only as a celebration for their sacrifice, but also to be aware that they may be impacted by those celebrations.
If you are suffering from PTSD, the best thing to do is to talk to your primary care provider about treatment options.
They may include some medications to help ease the anxiety or depression that often is associated with that disorder. Also, counseling and therapy can be very effective in adapting to a life. Whether you're a service member who is discharged or a member of the public,
there is hope if you suffer from PTSD. Erin Collins says it is very treatable. From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
Pop, boom, bang, squee! All noises you expect to hear from fireworks. And they're not necessarily pleasing to everyone. Here's New Wisco Weekend's commentator, Amanda Nimmer.
Guys, let's talk about fireworks. Yeah, I know 4th of July was on Friday, but that doesn't stop your neighbors or your friends or the random guy across the way from shooting off fireworks left and right until August. And if you can't tell from my sigh, I have a lot of experience with this. I mean, my neighbors, oh my God, they would set them off in the middle of the road, the middle of our road, in front of my house. We were mad. But what can you do? Call the cops? What are they going to do? Drive by, they'll stop for a bit, wait for them to go away, and they'll start again. I mean, there's only so much that they can do, and it's not necessarily even their job. And in my situation, well, until about 2 weeks ago when she passed, I had an almost 16-year-old beagle terrified of fireworks, which was unfortunate because her birthday is July 4th. She would have been 16. So every year, my poor Donna hated her birthday. So I'm going to give you guys a list of things that I've tried with more than just Donna, multiple dogs, on calming pets during fireworks, because these are going to keep happening and apparently we have to live with it. Step one, create a safe space. Create a little hidey hole. Does your pet prefer to go hide under the bed? Then create a little space there. Give them some snackies, maybe lay on the floor with them. Let them know they're not alone. The world may sound like it's erupting, but hey, you're right there with them. Which leads to number two, reassurance. Give them some pets. Cuddle them. Swaddle them in a blanket. That has worked. Swaddle your pet in a blanket. Hold them close and try to just distract them. Drown out that noise. Do what you can with what you got. Number three, Thunder Shirt. A Thunder Shirt is a shirt you can buy that helps pets with anxiety. So it wraps them tightly, has a little bit of weight. It's supposed to make them feel like they're being held and loved and comforted. You know, some people use it for when they're leaving their pets alone at home and they're prone to anxiety. I used mine for Donna for the fireworks. Did it work? Not really. She hated it. We'd put that shirt on her and she would constantly walk sideways wherever we were, giving us this look of, please just take it off. But did it distract her from the fireworks? A little bit. It did help. And it did help some of my other pets. So it's a maybe. It's a maybe on the Thunder Shirt. So that leads us to number two, using the pheromones. There's pheromone diffusers that can help pets with anxiety. And just like the calming pills and the calming treats, this is one size does not fit all. I have one dog that will get knocked out with calming treats. And the other one, I think it makes them more hyper. I think it makes it worse. So definitely try it and see what happens. You're going to want to give them about a half hour, hour before an event. Anything that would make them anxious, like the big booms in the sky, making it seem like it's cracked open and the aliens are coming or something. I don't know what the dogs are thinking are happening, but it's worth a try. And if that doesn't work, try the CBD treats for pets. No, I personally have not tried these, but I've heard very good things from other people. So it's worth a shot, but I'm leaning toward it probably is the same thing. You know, it's not one size fit all. It's going to affect each one differently. So it may or may not work. So what else is there left to try? We've created a safe space. We're reassuring them, letting them know they're loved. We drugged them. I mean, I don't know how else to put that. We gave them the treats that'll calm them, hopefully lull them into a more soothing state. That didn't work. So what is left to do? Beyond calling the cops, because again, that's just not going to do much. Well, I suppose all that's left is to do what we did when we woke up at 2 a.m. to fireworks randomly going off outside of our window, which is open that window and scream bloody murder outside to get them to stop. Like, for the love of God, have some consideration. We're doing all we can to just deal with your nonsense. Can't you not be nonsensical? Don't be a D-bag and shoot off fireworks after like 10 o'clock and maybe stop buying them from the fireworks stand first week after the July 4th, okay? I will give you a week because some people can't use them all. It might have rained. It might be fire season. Who knows? It might be too dry to set them off, but you have them and you want to do it. So go ahead. I'll give you that full freaking week. But after that, you guys, come on. Go to a field somewhere. You got a friend with a farmhouse? Go there. It's not even just our pets. There's people with PTSD. There's people trying to sleep. There's third shifters out there who are hearing them go off during the daytime. Like, come on. Don't be a D-bag. Those are your tips and tricks on how to deal with an unnecessary fireworks display that is happening outside your house. Best of luck to all of you. From New Wisco Weekend, I'm Amanda Nimmer. And there you go.
Some have said down through history, if you last, it's a mystery. But I guess they don't know what they're talking about. From the mountains down to the sea, you've become such a habit with me. America, America.
Coming up, a look at fireworks safety and the Doors. First, did you know that Monday is the National Day of Rock and Roll? And while we're free to celebrate it now, historians say in the very early days, many parents tried to stop the music, believing it signified a rejection of beliefs and morals. But the cultural impact quickly became far-reaching, affecting fashion, language, attitudes, and lifestyle, then and now. This is New Wisco Weekend.
And my brothers are all black and white, yellow too.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
This is New
Wisco Weekend on your local Civic Media radio stations, WISS and WGBW. I'm Lisa Hale, your host. Coming up, an important cover story on food insecurity and how Wisconsinites will be affected by federal cuts to SNAP. But first, let's hear Pete Schwabba's classic movie pick of the week.
New Wisco Weekend presents Pete Schwabba's classic movie pick of the week.
Keeping with this week's theme on New Wisco Weekend, my classic movie pick takes us back to the days of classic rock and one of its most famous bands. We head to the 60s by way of the 90s for the film The Doors. The film came out in 1991 and is packed with great songs that have stood the test of time, emphasizing the contributions The Doors made to the music world. Pound for pound, the film might not hold up against previous classic movie picks, but it has two factors going for it that other films don't have. Val Kilmer portrays Jim Morrison flawlessly. Yes, casting played a huge part in this film being labeled a classic. Director Oliver Stone also had a soundtrack that is unparalleled thanks to the production having the rights to the band's catalog. Stone starts the story with a young Morrison witnessing a bad car accident in a New Mexico desert, asserting that the experience stayed with Morrison and affected his art and writing throughout his life. The story forwards to Morrison as a young man who is consumed with writing poetry as he connects with former UCLA classmate and eventual Doors keyboard player, Ray Manzarek. The two form the band, and the rest is history, as they say. The film covers all the big occurrences the band experienced over their all-too-brief history, including Morrison's at-times contentious relationship with longtime girlfriend Pamela Corson, his being charged of indecent exposure at a Miami concert, and Morrison's eventual death in a Paris hotel room from a suspected drug overdose. And if you've seen the film, you'll remember this scene, or if you're old enough, maybe you remember the actual incident from the Ed Sullivan Show.
Meet Mr. Sullivan.
Wait, fellas, just great. I heard you're a record. Light that fire.
Light your fire.
Light that. Just
light good. My fire.
Great, fine. Just really, really fine. Just
well, I have one little thing to bring up. It's a small thing, but it's important. The guys at Network have told us that they have a little problem with one of your lyrics, the lyric, girl, we couldn't get much higher. See, because you can't say higher on Network, so they asked if you could say instead, girl, we can't get much better. Can you dig that?
How about, girl, you couldn't bite my wire.
The story is chock full of the band's dysfunctional drama, which seems incredibly cool when set to their timeless music. Jim Morrison was one of the most charismatic lead singers in the history of rock and roll. The late Val Kilmer was also one of the most respected actors of his time. He desperately wanted the role, so he immersed himself in the character for a year, learning all the words to every Doors song to impress Oliver Stone. Kilmer even dressed like Morrison and hung out at his old haunts on Sunset Boulevard. It paid off, and he won the part over other actors who were considered, including Keanu Reeves, Tom Cruise, Bill Paxton, John Travolta, and Johnny Depp. If you want to see the audition tape Kilmer sent Oliver Stone that made him playing Morrison a slam dunk, check out the Val Kilmer biopic, Val. Meg Ryan plays Morrison's longtime girlfriend, Pamela Corson. Actress Kyle MacLachlan, Kevin Dillon, and Frank Whaley comprise the rest of the Doors. There is also an appearance by the actual Doors bass player, John Densmore, as a sound engineer. Despite great performances and music, not everybody loved the film, including the surviving members of the Doors. They were united in their criticism of the film's accuracy regarding the band and at times Jim Morrison, saying they thought Stone's version of their friend made Morrison look like a raving lunatic. Manzarek in particular had issues with Stone, calling the film a terrible chronicling of the band's history. After reading the script, Manzarek refused to be part of the filming, despite being asked several times by Oliver Stone. While not fans of the film, they did respect and praise Kilmer's performance. Densmore said he thought Kilmer should have been nominated for an Oscar because he was so spot on as Morrison that any time he was around Kilmer on the set, it gave him the creeps. A few more movie fun facts. Jim Morrison's gravesite in Paris, according to IMDb, is the fourth most popular attraction in the city after the Eiffel Tower, Notre Dame, and the Louvre. And in case you were skeptical of just how seriously Kilmer took this project, when filming concluded, he needed psychiatric help to get Jim Morrison out of his head. The Doors did not take the advice of Ed Sullivan or his assistant and sang the song Light My Fire as it was written and were never invited back to the show, but they didn't seem to care. That, ladies and gentlemen, is rock and roll. The Doors is this week's classic movie pick of the week. For more movie and entertainment talk, join me weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. for Nightlight here on WISS and WGBW. For New Wisco Weekend, I'm Pete Schwabba.
For a look at a number of events going on this weekend in New Wisco, check out the New Wisco 411 on our websites, wgbw.fm and wiss.fm.
This is New Wisco Weekend.
Safe, sane, and sober are three words to keep in mind when using fireworks at home. Green Bay Metro Fire Captain Nick Craig said fireworks cause thousands of children to end up in the emergency room every year.
The biggest thing is the amount of injuries. We're looking at over 10,000 injuries caused by consumer fireworks every year. And the ones that are legal for consumers to buy are actually causing the majority of those injuries.
The types of fireworks that cause the most injuries are the ones that Craig said are considered safe and sane, like sparklers.
For example, sparklers, they burn at over 1,200 degrees. That's super hot. Obviously, the end of the metal rod on the sparkler is red hot when it's done burning. Sparklers account for 29% of fireworks injuries for children under the age of 5.
In addition to injuries, Craig said fireworks are also the cause of many structure fires.
Info that we have is from 2022. Average of 31,000 fires started across the U.S., 3,500 structure fires, 26,000 outside fires. And a side note with that is wildfires started by fireworks are doubled on the 4th of July.
Here are some fireworks safety tips if you plan on using fireworks at home. Always have adult supervision. Keep spectators at a safe distance. Never give sparklers or any fireworks to a child under 5. Never point fireworks at a person or an animal. Never use fireworks while impaired by alcohol or drugs. Keep a bucket of water nearby in case of fire or injury. And make sure that you dispose of all used fireworks in a bucket of water overnight before discarding. Craig says to avoid fires, that's the most important tip.
Even the safe and sane ones, the spark fountains, the snakes, the sparklers, all those should be put into a bucket of water overnight away from a building. That's the biggest thing, is away from a structure.
For New Wisco Weekend, I'm Lisa Hale. Coming up on New Wisco Weekend, our cover story with Melissa Kay and Jackie Anderson of Feeding America. We'll be right back. This is New Wisco Weekend. For WISS and WGBW, I'm Lisa Hale, your host. It's time now for our cover story. What the Trump administration calls the Big Beautiful Bill passed the U.S. Senate on Tuesday with a vote so close that Vice President J.D. Vance had to cast the tie-breaking vote. Even before that vote was taken, talks of cuts to Medicaid and to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, caused tension in Wisconsin. New Wisco Weekend's Melissa Kay spoke with Feeding America's Jackie Anderson on how this will affect those experiencing food insecurity and how businesses and organizations will also be affected.
I'm Melissa Kay, and I am here with Jackie Anderson, who is Feeding Wisconsin's Executive Director. Welcome, Jackie.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to speak with you today. But what we have to talk about is not good news. So tell me what would happen to SNAP or the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or the possible implications if this federal budget bill passes the Senate.
Yeah, thank you so much for the question. So just to kind of ground us, in Wisconsin, SNAP is called food share. So throughout this interview, I'll probably use those two words interchangeably. And what is being proposed right now with the Senate budget is potential cuts, looking around $211 billion that will be cut from SNAP. And I think what's important for us to kind of keep at the nucleus of this conversation is the number of people who are going to be impacted by those SNAP cuts. So if you look from a statewide perspective, in Wisconsin, there's about 705,000 people who participate in the SNAP program, of which 270 of those are children and 108,000 are seniors. So that means the most vulnerable folks are going to be impacted by these SNAP cuts. But the other thing that I think we need to factor into this conversation, too, is the economic impacts of losing SNAP benefits. So that if you're thinking about a grocery store, for example, who receives SNAP benefits, they no longer will receive those benefits. If you are thinking about, like,
by that, just to clarify, you mean people coming to shop at the grocery store.
Exactly.
They can't spend the money there then because they don't have the money to spend.
You nailed it. Yep. So that means farmers markets are going to be impacted. Local stores where you, like Walmart's, Targets, like they will be impacted. So we've got the people who are going to be impacted, those who are using SNAP, and then the economic piece as well, which is two important things to think about for this conversation.
And then, like, specifically here in Wood County, like the town of Pittsville, which is just a little ways outside of Wisconsin Rapids, they had a small, and Pittsville's a very small town, but they had a small little grocery store for a little while, and now it's only managed to be open for a couple of years and it's closed. Are we going to see more rural grocery stores closing potentially because of these cuts?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's a lot of factors at play. I think SNAP benefit cuts is going to be one thing. We also know canned goods, for example, could potentially go up because of tariffs on steel. So we're already starting to talk about that from the food bank perspective, because many of our food banks do purchase canned goods. You know, not everything is donated. And we know that those costs are going to be going up too because of tariffs. So I think thinking about how our rural community grocery stores are going to be impacted, it's a reality that we need to consider.
And if you could tell me a little bit more about Feeding Wisconsin as an organization and what you do to help people with food insecurity.
Yeah, so Feeding Wisconsin is what's called a partner state association, which means that we support all six Feeding America food banks throughout the state. So we help around policy, we help around advocacy, any kind of statewide nutrition programs could be run through us. So we bring everybody together, and here's an example, like we're bringing all the different food banks and the pantries that they work with together to have an advocacy coalition so that we can make sure that we're all in lockstep when it comes to advocating for things like SNAP benefits, advocating for things like funding in our state budget. So we help to organize all that as a state.
Okay, so just put in layman's terms what that means. What does that look like?
Yeah. So it means if we're thinking about the state level, it means getting everybody the same talking points, helping them to
each
reach
food
out,
bank,
each individual person who's part of that food bank footprint.
Okay.
So, you know, if you look at our state, it's divided by the footprint or the districts or the counties that mm-hmm. each individual food bank works with. We work with the food pantries that those food banks work with. So the difference between a food bank and a food pantry, the food bank is like the warehouse of a lot of food. So they get the food in and then they send it out to their food pantries. We work with about 1,000 food pantries throughout the state. So those food pantries, we work with them to help connect with their legislators, for example, to help organize visits to DC to talk to congressional leaders. Like those are some of the things that we organize.
Okay, so like you understand, like we talked about, the implications of what this budget bill would do, so that the people who are running these food banks don't also have to do that.
Absolutely. And we give them the tools and the resources, and we give them trainings, talking points. We hold their hand when they go to like a public hearing, for example. Like we really support them to give them that extra confidence, because that they don't traditionally do advocacy work like this. So it's something very new for a lot of them.
Okay. How much do food banks in Wisconsin rely on federal funding?
Well, I can tell you a couple things that have been cut. So, you know, it's hard to really say how much, because each food bank relies on it differently. So a couple different ways that three of our food banks participate is something called TFAP. So that's the emergency food that comes from the federal government. So we know based on some TFAP cuts that overall they lost about 30% of the food that was coming in from that federal funding stream. So if you think about that, so 30% of the overall funding food that they would get Now the food banks are having to purchase that on their own. So they mm-hmm. weren't planning on that. That was a cut that happened on the federal level. We didn't know that that was going to happen. So that is one example. Another example of another like federal stream of funding is what's called LFPA. So that's Local Food Purchasing Agreement. So that funding would go towards, go to the local farmers. So to help buy seeds and to help purchase equipment. So that funding too, you know, we would equate the food that they would create, it would go back to the food pantry. So I'll give you a couple examples of that. So with the food pantries or the food banks that we work with, about 254 pantries benefited from that program alone, and they received about $4.2 million of food from the local farmers to go directly mm-hmm. to their pantries. So that too has been cut. So those are just a couple examples of federal funding that we no longer will see.
So it's right not now. Only hurting the food pantries, but it's also hurting our farmers.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's detrimental. And, you know, our food banks are working really hard to try to help those farmers out, you know, thinking about additional funding that they can come up with to reimburse to the farmers to augment the cuts that they had. But, you know, it was unexpected that that cut happened as well.
What could people do on the local level to help advocate for ourselves? Like I have friends and family who rely on SNAP benefits just mm-hmm. to put food on their table for their kids.
Yep.
What can someone like me or someone like my friend do to help, I don't know, to educate or spread the word, or what do we need to do?
Yeah. So I always talk about it in a three-prong approach. So the first one is reach out to your legislators on the state level and on the federal level. And on our Feeding Wisconsin website, it kind of walks you through how to be able to do that. We have two sign-on letters right now that all you need to do is to put in your address and your local story and why SNAP is really important to you or to your family members or whomever. And those get sent to either our congressional leaders or our state leaders. So, And I say this because, you know, I still hear from some legislators that food insecurity is not happening in their districts. And we know that that is not true. So unless we talk about it and educate our legislators and have them really understand, like, how many people this is going to impact, you know, they don't necessarily know. So it's our role to educate them. So that's the first thing. The second thing is any kind of donations. I mean, absolutely, whether it be food and or financial, our food banks and Feeding Wisconsin, like we need it because we're getting cuts in other areas. So that is the second piece. And then the third piece is volunteer your time because we know that operationally, a lot of the food banks are having to change their structure, right? Because we know that there's cuts. So that means that there could potentially be less staff, but yet there's still that big vat of rice that needs to be broken down into tiny bags to be able to give to our neighbors. Like, that still needs to happen. So volunteering your time, like, that is also really, really important.
Is there anything else that you would want our listeners to know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just understanding that we will get through this. It's going to be really, really difficult, but it takes everybody talking about this. So if you have the opportunity to talk to someone at the grocery store or, you know, at a restaurant or wherever about those stories, like, you know, like you said, like where your friends and your family members are using SNAP, that's really important to talk about it and create the human side of this. It's not just a what we're seeing in the news, but it is real and it's going to impact our lives, not only on cuts, but around eligibility requirements too. So those people who currently are on SNAP, they're now going to have to prove that they're working up to the age of 65. Parents who have children who are school age, they're going to have to go through additional red tape. So it's not only the financial implications, but there's going to be a lot more barriers if this budget does actually pass. So that's what we're trying to advocate and push out.
Mm-hmm. And one other question that I have heard a little bit more often here lately is people who are getting SNAP benefits or any kind of these food assistance programs, they're not necessarily the people that you would think they are.
Right.
That this affects more than just people who are maybe unable to work or choose not to work. This is a far-reaching issue across our society.
Yeah, you are so spot on. You know, there's this perception that, you know, a person who is using SNAP benefits is, doesn't want to work and, you know, they just want to take advantage of the system. And that is absolutely not the case. Where it's hardworking people, many people are trying to balance one or two different jobs to make ends meet. And what we're seeing at our food banks and food pantries is, you know, a good example that I just heard about yesterday was up in Wausau, and the pantry there is called Neighbor's Place, and they have seen a 400% increase in the number of people who are coming to their food pantries. So that's what we're seeing across the board. So people who are working and they used to only have to go to a food pantry once, now they're having to come two or three times because of inflation and because of, you know, all the things that are happening. So you know, the food pantries are working as hard as they can. That Wausau example, they're now offering nighttime distribution, which they've never had to do in the past. So now they're having to open their doors, which then they have to pay their staff more. You know, I mean, it's the continual kind of
snowball
circle.
Effect. Kind
exactly.
Of.
Exactly. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, it's the need is increasing and the resources are decreasing. So we're at a really hard time right now.
Well, I do very much appreciate you taking the time to speak with me today, Jackie.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
For New Wisco Weekend, I'm Melissa Kay.
Coming up on New Wisco Weekend, Wisconsin's own Bodines.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
This is New Wisco Weekend. I'm Lisa Hale. Our musical act this week is the Bodines, a rock band from Waukesha that got a lot of attention in the 90s when their song Closer to Free was the theme song for the TV show Party of Five. They're still at it, and they appeared on Civic Media's Nightlight with Peach Wabba on Monday. And here are the Bodines.
We see you walking down the street now every day. Wishing by the people as you make your way. And you're walking proud now, baby. You got your head held high. Don't you know that this the world sees your heart cry? Oh, yeah, now see how hard you try. Make yourself be.
This is Nightlight with Peach Wabba. I am Peach Wabba. Great to have you with me. Let me know your thoughts. Right now, I'm very excited to welcome my next guest. In the 90s, I discovered, actually it was the 80s, I discovered the Bodines, and I eventually got to know them a little bit, specifically Kurt Newman, who wrote a movie score for my film, The Godfather of Green Bay, and I've just been a huge fan ever since, and I'm very thrilled to welcome him onto Nightlight for the first time. Kurt Newman, the frontman and founder of the Bodines. Hey, buddy.
Hey, Pete, how you doing?
Doing very well. This is kind of cool. When I discovered you guys, Outside Looking In had just come out, but I had to go back and check out Love and Hope and Sex and Dreams. That has a 40-year anniversary coming up. What are your thoughts on that? It was such a breakthrough album. I think it was Rolling Stone said you guys were the breakout band of the year in 1986 or 1987. How do you feel about Love and Hope and Sex and Dreams all these years later?
You know, I'm proud of it. It was a good record. It was a great snapshot of the band, you know, where they were at that time in our careers. And so I just kind of feel like it's a celebration of 40 years of singing songs with all these different fans in all these different cities, all these different places, and people who have been connected to the music for so many years. And so that's kind of the way I'm looking at it, although, you know, obviously Love and Hope and Sex and Dreams is part of that history, but I kind of see all the records as part of that history, you know, and every day going forward, you know.
That is fantastic. I'm just going to share how I discovered the Bodines. It was 1987, and I was in my dorm room at DePaul University, and a buddy of mine comes in and says, hey, I got an extra ticket for U2. And I almost passed on going to see U2 for $20 at the Rosemont Horizon. And I'm so glad I went, because I got into you guys. You were the opening act. And when you said we're from Waukesha, Wisconsin, the place went nuts because you guys were so close to home. And that was the first time I saw you guys, and I've been hooked on your music ever since. It's been just so much fun. What's your favorite venue to play, Kurt? You've played huge venues, and you've played these little ones. Do you have a sweet spot where you like a live crowd venue size?
You know, it's the thing to say about that is it's not the physical location, like a venue or anything like that. It's the crowd that shows up.
Yeah.
For a band, that makes all the difference in the world for the band. You can be in a tiny place, you can be in a huge space. If the crowd is there and they're into it, then it's the best show. It's because that's the only reason I'm there, you know?
Yeah.
I can play music in my living room all I want and enjoy music, but what I'm trying to do is come out and play a show and do it with people, with right. the audience. You know, we're trying to all come together. I tell people every night when I play that music has a healing quality to it, and this world right now could really use some healing quality. There's been so much division and pulling apart, and I just think music has a magical ability to pull people back together. You forget all your strange belief systems for a while, and you just get into the music and you sing songs together, and you remember your humanity. And so that's why I still to this day love playing music and just getting in a room and like, let's put all the bull aside
right.
and just come together and sing some songs together and remember like what really matters and what feels so great and healing to your soul.
For being a part of New Wisco Weekend, our issue focusing on rock and roll and the 4th of July holiday. New Wisco Weekend is produced and written by Terry Barr and Lisa Hale. Our executive producer is Todd Michaels, directed by Lisa Hale. Lead correspondent is Terry Barr, with features this week by Melissa Kay, Joanne Kruletz, and Pete Schwaba. Our commentator is Amanda Nimmer. If you have a story you'd like to hear covered, please feel free to email me at any time, lisa.hale@civicmedia.us. I'm Civic Media Northeast Wisconsin Bureau Chief Lisa Hale for WISS and WGBW News. Be unstoppable.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.